Hello and welcome to Ask Margot. Today we have lots of interesting things to talk about. Questions about every aspect of life, really. And we, of course, welcome your questions and invite you to send them in for me to give you answers to the sticky things. You can write to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or you can write to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. I'm Margot de Coatsworth and I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, an author of books on life and love, a speaker, and I have an amazing connection to the universe, the word, which we always finish these episodes with. I usually focus on one thing I do by way of introduction. I'm the kind of person who doesn't like to do the same thing twice, which is interesting really because I used to run a deli food store and I could cook the same cakes every day quite happily. Today I'm going to talk about my love of food, which is an abiding passion that I can't ever seem to shake. I spend a good deal of my time thinking about food and food establishments that would work very well, although I often say to my friends and family, don't let me do it. Don't let me try and open another foodie place. In the past, I've set up a fine dining kitchen, that's quite a few years ago, a suburban deli food store. I've produced food for a city cafe. I've catered all kinds of things, parties, private events, weddings, and I even cooked once for a TV program that was being made on an island in the Caribbean. That was fun. A New York couple had won this special island holiday. And I was using ingredients like limes and lobsters and coconuts, amazing fresh fish and exotic Central American ingredients. That was in the days before we had such great sharing capability in terms of photos of our food and travel adventures. I do think it's terribly important in life for us to follow the things that light us up. And I know I always encourage my children to find the thing that really makes them happy and then to make their work around that rather than to work so they can afford to do the things that make them happy when they're not working. So much of our life is tied up with our working day. Think about it, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for decades. What a great and worthy aspiration it is, surely, to do the thing that you love. I can say that having worked for myself for such a long time now that I couldn't imagine any other way. I love food, I love writing, and I love exploring the possibilities that we have to live a great life, happy, healthy, and in harmony. I'm endlessly inspired about our connection to the universe and the meaning of life. And I don't mean the physical universe, although that's amazing. I mean the metaphysical universe, or God. I'm working on a project at the moment that really interests me. I made a chocolate mousse some time ago, which only had two ingredients in it. It was very inspirational. I made it at my daughter's in London, but we couldn't find the recipe again. And even when I searched online, there was no two-ingredient mousse made with these particular ingredients. Anyway, I had a play in the kitchen and it worked. I used 3 whipped egg whites, not too dryly whipped, but holding their shape. And then I melted 100 grams of chocolate and stirred that through, obviously delicately. Spooned it into pots or glasses or whatever you like, and then put it in the fridge. It produces the most light, refreshing, really quite startling chocolate mousse. Of course, you can serve it with cream, which I always like to do with pretty much everything. It was really a bit of a revelation and good enough to eat for breakfast. So this got me thinking and I thought, oh, wonder what it would be like to write a 2-ingredient cookbook. I had a look online, couldn't find one. There are lots of other ones, but not 2. But in fact, I did find one that was written about 10 years ago in the States. I didn't look at it any further because I want my ideas to be my own. And often people will say a limited number of ingredients, but they're using things like a cake mix or pre-made pancakes or something like that, which is kind of cheating in my book. So I prefer to make things from scratch. Maybe I buy a pesto, but mostly it's all from scratch. So I've come up with 100 recipes to try. So I'll be very busy for the next few months. Anyway, that's a complete aside, just my intro for the day. Let's get on with our questions. I have just finished recently speaking with Josh, who wanted to ask about doubt and how doubt blocks incoming good. And also, he wanted to talk about the illusion of time. This time thing seems to keep popping up. And I have a really great analogy I'd like to share with you around that. I've found it helpful in terms of getting my head around not timelessness, but time that is maybe not as linear as we think. Let's start with the question about time. Imagine you're holding in your hands a book, and that book is the story of your life, which is written chronologically. If you open the book at the beginning, you might see on this date you were born. And then you might read the story of your life. And if you opened it in the middle, maybe you'd see where you are now. Or a third of the way, wherever. Imagine it is your life. But equally, you could open the book near the end or at any page. And that page would speak as though that time was happening now in this moment. I find that really interesting, that you can open the book at any point and that is the current reality. But equally, you could choose to open it somewhere else and that would appear to be what was happening then. Perhaps time is like that book, timeless, that you can dip in and out of it and it appears to be a reality at that time. But actually, it's timeless because you're opening it anyway. In life, we just turn the pages one by one, and therefore it's a linear process. But theoretically, if time isn't linear, you're not tied to that. I confess that this is almost too much for me to get my head around. Nevertheless, it's kind of fascinating. I'm not saying we have the ability to open the book anywhere, but I think if we look at time as a whole, this idea of a book can help us begin to think a bit more expansively about time. I'd like to think it can help us deal with the brevity of life and even sometimes the pain of life if we say to ourselves, this is just a flash, a moment in the bigger scheme of things. Now I think I'll turn the page. It's also a way for us to deal with moving forward from things that we want to progress from. This unwanted thing has happened, but I'm not going to get stuck on this page because it's just one page in the page of my life, and I'm going to turn that page and move to my next chapter. Do you see how helpful that can be as a way of dealing with the thing that may have had the potential to keep us chained to a place we don't want? The message here is that the power to turn the page is yours. It's your book and your story. Very interesting, I think. But now let's talk about boys. And then we'll come back to doubt. I've had a number of discussions recently about the whole dating game thing. And there was a question from Melissa about how much initiative a woman should take. I know the modern take is that women can ask the man out. I do think there are some men who are not confident and yet are in the kind of mindset that they would like to go out with somebody or that they're attracted to somebody. I know two very nice men I can think of who would be lovely, charming companions and lifelong mates, potentially, but lack the bold confidence to ask someone they like out. One particular example of this was a friend who told me he was a bit like a deer in headlights when the woman he's now been with for many years asked him out for coffee. I think it's absolutely acceptable for a woman to suggest meeting for a chat or on a friendly basis, and then if things go further, great. If we meet an interesting person, male or female, we need to be able to suggest a continuing conversation or a casual coffee. It doesn't mean you're trying to pounce on them, it means you're trying to connect with them, which is flattering and perfectly acceptable coming from a woman to a man. But the very aggressive switching of roles that seems to be prevalent now, I'm not so sure about. Generally, we need to think about how we are wired. Once, that meant that women were looking for a man who could be a provider and a protector. I think in a kind of essential way, that's true, even though today women don't need the kind of protection and provision from a man that perhaps we used to. I like to think of it as caring for and caring about. That's what women want from men. They want to be cared about and they want to be cared for. Every couple or every individual probably defines that differently. Women by nature are mostly nurturers and carers. That's our counter to men being providers and protectors. I often think a man wants the woman he's with to feel that he is her pick and that she only has eyes for him. And likewise, a woman wants to feel that the man she is with sees her as beautiful and the most desirable woman he could be with. I was speaking with a man the other day who said a woman he knew was quite attractive. But that woman told me that another man had said to her that she was beautiful. I couldn't help but think, which one is she more likely to pick? Someone who saw her as quite attractive or someone who saw her as beautiful? You might say that there are not many truly beautiful women in the world. And I agree, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Beauty is more than skin deep. Beauty is in perception. If you find a man who sees you as beautiful, try and keep him. Gentlemen, this is for you. If you are seeking the attention of a particular woman, don't make her feel that she is just kind of adequate. Make her feel that she is the only choice for you, the only woman in the world for you. I know that sounds a bit over the top, but frankly, if she doesn't feel that you see her as your first choice above everyone else, what's the point? Ladies, I think encouraging a man is vitally important. Tell him he looks good. Tell him he's appealing, he's big and strong, and that you just don't know how you could manage without him. Women can manage by themselves, of course, but that's not the point here. It's that you are recognizing, acknowledging, and appreciating him. I always think it's fun to go a bit over the top. The other person knows you're doing that, but they love it anyway. And you're choosing to do it because you're choosing to make them feel good about themselves and to make them feel vitally important to you. I know people have individual relationships where they can be a bit hissy with each other or a bit deprecating, but when you make even a little dig, in my opinion, it sits somewhere with that other person. You're not building them up, you are criticizing them. I'm not good with this because a dig is a dig is a dig in my book. And why do it? Is it because you find it entertaining? I don't think so. I think there's a residual effect and you need to do the opposite. Surprise your other person by doing the opposite because you might be surprised at the feedback you get from being encouraging and appreciative instead of having a little dig, even if you call it joking. Are they laughing? Maybe. Make a decision, an agreement with yourself that you're going to be supportive and encouraging in every way, in public and in private. It's quite a fabulous thing to hear someone say, he's so wonderful about their husband, or she's the best about their wife or partner. It might leave a few people speechless if you've never spoken publicly like that before. It just stops people in their tracks when they hear long-time couples say great things about each other. It's inspirational and it's aspirational. Here's a quote I want to share with you from a TV series I was watching recently where I get a huge amount of resource and research from. I was watching a chap who was in his 30s, a woman in it was very full-on in pursuing this man. And he hadn't really had a chance to even think about doing anything himself. And he said to his friend, some men seek a chase, seek romance. I am one of those men. I believe in slow seduction. I thought, oh, that was very old-fashioned, but also great, because here's a man who's prepared to take the time to play in this lovely game of pursuit and romance. Bravo, boys, bring it on. Now, we're going to go back to our question about doubt from Josh and how doubt might be the thing that's delaying good coming into his life. Well, if we come from the perspective that we're energetic beings, and if we begin with the premise that what we project is what's coming back to us, we have to say that doubt creates more doubt. Let's say what we focus on is what we get. Many people have different ways of explaining this, that you get more of what you focus on, the boomerang effect, the law of attraction. But often you'll find that if someone is very verbal about something unwanted in their life, they always have some of that thing to talk about. Sometimes people, if they're talking about being sick, tend to have lots of sickness to talk about. If they're poor and you talk about being poor, poor is your point of attraction. If you lack love and you constantly talk about how you're lacking love or any other thing in the lack category, that seems to be what there's plenty to talk about. I know that really isn't a happy thought, and it makes us angry to think about that's how life works. But once you know that, you have the power to change it. If you look at the situation you're in at the moment and say, I would like more of such and such, isn't that a better way of putting it? Let's not say, boo-hoo, poor me, I haven't got love, money, success, happiness, whatever it is. Let's turn that around and say, I'd like more money, more love, more success, more joy. Can you feel the difference in the energy between those two statements? One is kind of desperate, sad, and feeling sorry for yourself. And the next one is saying, wouldn't it be great to have more of dot, dot, dot? Just as you can feel the difference in the energy of those two statements, you will also be projecting a different point of attraction. I know that we have not been brought up to understand this principle, but it is how the universe seems to work, and that's how stuff shows up or doesn't show up. We are responding to what we're projecting. If you talk about focus on something you don't want, or the lack of something, which is the same thing, that becomes your point of attraction. I know I'm saying this twice. The thing is about our brains is that we need to hear things repeatedly for them to settle into our subconscious and then to show up in our conscious life. Okay, so if we accept that, how do we change it? I can tell you. This is my second thought theory. A thought comes into your head, oh, I wish I had such and such. It's not here and I want it now. I think like that. I don't know that we can ever stop those first thoughts. The second thought, though, is where our power is. This is where we say, I love the idea of the highly desired thing. And then you think about how you would feel if you had that thing you wanted now. You could say, it feels so wonderful having the highly desired thing. If you find it hard to say that you're already there, I understand that. But if you can try to somehow scoop your imagination up and plonk yourself right into the imagery of where you want to be and kind of play there, revel in it. Think about Scrooge McDuck when he jumps into his money bin and plays in it. Sort of full immersion. Jump into the reality of what you would like. Keep yourself there. And go there anytime you need a little boost. Pounce on any hint of lack, that first thought. Acknowledge only where you want to be and put yourself back into your own joy pit, your own dream reality. It is possible to train yourself in this way so that most of your life you're actually feeling pretty good because you're thinking about what you want and not what you don't want. Even if you spend a long time there, and I have certainly spent a long time in this kind of space, but I've felt better about life and about myself by thinking about what I want rather than by thinking about what I lack. And although you're projecting yourself forward, if you like, it's the most amazing way to enjoy your now. Because in this present moment, you're making sure you are thinking good things and therefore you're feeling good in the present. because that's all we really have. The past is done. The future isn't here yet. So I call it the present future. This moment forward and the next one that follows in that moment is all that we have. That's where we have to put our creative energy. That's where we have to make sure we are in our happy place, because life is made up of continuous present moments. So doubt, we acknowledge you're probably going to pop up, and maybe more than we would like, but we're not powerless in the face of doubt. We're powerful to choose what we think about, and therefore how we feel, and therefore what shows up. So my advice regarding that, Josh, is to give the boot to doubt. Give it no glory, no space, no standing, and use your power, which is only yours and no one else can do it for you to fix on what it is you want and how you choose to feel in this moment. Your mission in life, should you choose to accept it, is to feel good whenever you possibly can. Because a whole succession of feeling good days equals a really great life, a life well lived. Our last question today comes from a youngish man. Let's call him Zach. We were discussing compliments, and probably I was lamenting that they're not very forthcoming, especially from men in our country. Women are quite good at encouraging each other. They do it about their hair, they do it about their capabilities, they compliment each other about clothes, all kinds of things. But we don't really live in a culture where men openly compliment women, perhaps as much as they should and as women would like. I've seen boys and families where fathers have not been complimentary, particularly, say, to their wife. Nevertheless, the boys pick up this quality for themselves and deliberately decide that they will be a person who compliments women. The same thing goes for etiquette. I had a friend who would always stand up when he was out to dinner, and a woman got up to leave the table. And again, when she came back, some men looked up in confusion because they didn't know what was happening. And that's an excessively polite and quite old-fashioned thing for a man to do, and it's pretty rare these days. But the friend who stood up told me he was not brought up that way, and he chose to adopt those particular niceties and manners because that's the person he wanted to be. And that's the key, isn't it? Who is the person you want to be? How do you want to show up in life? How do you want to be seen? How do you want to behave? And what kind of feedback do you want to get from other people? I'm not suggesting men should stand when a woman leaves the table. My point is that we get to choose how we behave. The young man I was talking to would say, "Oh, you look good," or "That's a nice perfume," or some other appreciative thing. And I said that was cool, even though he hadn't been brought up like that. He said to me, "Why wouldn't I do that? It's such a small thing to compliment somebody. And the effect of a simple compliment can last that person for a whole day." Well, I think that's fantastic. In fact, a compliment can stick in your mind for your whole life. Has to be a good one, of course. So my call to action, my challenge, if you like, to all of you today, is to compliment where you have not complimented before. Even if it's going where no man has gone before, try and do it and see what happens. Isn't life, the whole of our life, an experiment? Each of us is experimenting, making choices, deciding how our lives are going to be shaped. We have so much power in this respect. We can be dismissive because it seems such a small and insignificant thing. But what about the ripple effect? Just like a pebble dropped in a pond. The ripple effect can just go far and wide and reverberate far beyond what you can see. So you can touch someone's life with a compliment. They feel better. Their head shoots up. Their shoulders go back. They feel more confident, more seen, more appreciated. Then they pass that on to the next person. Who knows where that will end? I think we underestimate ourselves and our power to create change. Let's all give a compliment today to somebody and see just what we can do with that, what goes out from us, what comes back, and how we can change our lives for good. Well, we're going to finish today with the word, our message from the universe. It's a lovely message, and it fits in with everything we've been talking about today, about our power in the small things to make change in a big way. Here we go. You can see the power that lies within the smallest of things. It is sometimes called the power of intention. Be deliberate in your intentions. Intentions for good, for change, for progress, for humanity. You are not a small, insignificant being in a vast world. You are a creator, a change maker, a being of import and power. You all have power. It's yours to do with as you choose. You may choose not to use it proactively, or you may choose it to change your world for good. The power to do so is in your hands. You decide what your next move is. Thank you so much for being with us today. Hope you have a great week. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.